I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, I'm excited to have my friend Michelle Van Loon back on the podcast. Ooh, and it was so close. I almost said broadcast. Old habits die hard. What can I say? Anyway, of course, Michelle, and you'll see this on the website, you'll find it in the show notes, is author of a couple of books, but her most recent, Born to Wander, Recovering the Value of Our Pilgrim Identity, is quite new and out there for you to find and purchase wherever you want to. Find bookstores online, but you'll see it there if you are driving along and can't, you know, write that all down. You can find it at the website or in the show notes. Michelle is of Jewish heritage. She is someone who is spiritually hungry, and we get that and read that in her books. She's a wonderful storyteller, and I am grateful for her writing, for her friendship. She's contributed to Christianity Today, and she's written, and her articles have been seen in In Touch magazine, and she is co-founder of something I love. It's called theperennialgen.com. It's a website for midlife women and men. Probably more women pay attention to it and write for it, but it is worth checking out. Relevant, helpful articles. Welcome back to the podcast, Michelle.
I am super glad to be with you. This is like the funnest thing I get to do this week, for sure. So.
Well, I love having you on because you are a tremendous conversationalist. And when I reach out to you and say, what's on your mind these days? I get an email back with copious possible conversation starters. And I love that. And today is no different. And so I'm delighted that you're here. So we're going to start with your very first topic. You know, you wrote back to me and you said, it's been said that character is who we are when no one's watching. And you go on to talk about from the Book of Proverbs to Aesop's Fables to more current books like David Brooks' The Road to Character, as well as Karen Swallow Pryor's On Reading Well, as well as just about every biography of a historical figure ever written. There are always voices encouraging us toward developing character. And I mean, obviously, this is kind of rising to the surface currently. At the recording of this podcast, the investigation is still going on, or maybe just finishing up with Brett Kavanaugh and other people. And so, you know, this is something that we've been thinking about collectively, societally, as well as a topic that you've raised here. And I'm guessing that maybe it kind of rose up from what's going on in our world today. Say more about why this popped into your mind.
Well, I remember when my kids were young, reading all kinds of books, you know, fairy tales, fables, all of those things that were designed with a moral in mind. You know, there's moral character. And so we focus a lot on teaching right and wrong to young kids. And yet there's this disconnect, because all we have to do is open up our computer and look at whatever new, terrible, weird thing is going on in the news. And then 10 minutes later, refresh our news feed, and there's still more. And so much of it traces back to moral choices, character choices. And I think no matter where we are politically in this country, I think we can all agree that we're seeing a breakdown of character right now. And people aren't exactly sure what to talk about it. We can wring our hands about it, but as far as what adult character development looks like, I'm not sure that we're really able to talk about it well. Hmm. So that's why this one was on my mind.
Well, and you know what's interesting to me? Even as you said all that, I'm reaching over on my desk. Right next to my desk, I've hung on to, you know, whether you like the titles or not, doesn't matter, Too Blessed to be Stressed for Moms, mm-hmm. Simple Joys, which is geared, again, toward moms. You can see the cover of it. It's geared toward women, but it takes a look at mom life. The Year of Living Happy, Finding Contentment and Connection in a Crazy World. Also has a, also something that's geared, they might not say on the back that it's geared toward moms, but I've got to tell you that it's definitely geared toward women, but I've gotten a million lately, okay, maybe 10, books specifically geared to moms. And even as you said that, what popped into my mind was, oh, that's good, and we do need to be forming the character of our children. Where on earth are the books geared to dads? It's only geared, you know, that's maybe another topic, but it's a part of this, isn't it? It's part of the discussion.
And it still comes back to that pressure of raising your children well in the church, particularly because, you know, most of your listeners are either attending a church or have had connection with the church in some way in their lives. You know, I'm operating on that assumption.
I think that's fair.
And we hear a lot about how we're supposed to disciple our children. I get that. It's there in the Bible. The emphasis is important. It is true throughout. However, that emphasis about moral choices and being able to understand the implications ethically of what we're doing, I'm just not sure that we in the Christian world are doing a very good job of it. Now, we can look at the politics of our world and we can think, oh, well, that's obviously true. But even if I just bring it back to our local lives, where we work, where we worship, our community, a lot of us are learning to kind of bend things situationally, take shortcuts, and be expedient in our thinking, you know, in ways that have very little to do with really good character. So...
You mentioned the church. You were mentioning it in a different way that get, you know, assuming that many listening to this podcast have that connection. But I think I think that there are multiple prongs to this conversation, but I don't hear much about what we're talking about right now in church, from the pulpit. Even I'm thinking about Sunday school, VBS, you know, where is that conversation? And where is that conversation even in our schools? Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you're homeschooling, private school, public school, where is that conversation happening? And I, you know, home has got to be the primary place. I am 100% convinced of that.
Absolutely.
But it's got to be talked about in these other venues as well. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, it is. I'm going to draw on my Jewish heritage here for a moment, because one thing that is very strong in the Jewish community, and it doesn't matter whether it's a very Orthodox, super conservative kind of community or a very liberal reform community or anything in between, Reconstructionist, conservative, it doesn't matter. Those are kind of the mainstreams in Judaism. The question of ethics and moral choice is something that is an ongoing discussion throughout the lifespan. In ways that it surprises me how much it's missing in the Christian world. We get lots of do's and don'ts, or we get the sense that there are do's and don'ts.
Oh yeah, it's so rule-based.
It's so rule-based that we never actually tease any of those things out to think, well, how does this apply? What are the ethics like?
Right.
Part of what the way that Jewish learning happens is through debate and discussion about these things. Well, here's a verse or here's an idea. What does it mean? How does it play out? What about this? What about that? And that flies in the face, particularly among women. Christian women particularly feel sometimes afraid to push back or to challenge or to ask questions. And I have had both influences in my life. I've been a believer since my teens. I'm 59 now. And so I understand kind of what the unspoken Christian rules of engagement are. Mm-hmm. But I also have my own history and culture and family and experience. Mm-hmm. So I'll ask a question. I'll raise my voice in ways that sometimes, it's gotten me into trouble a few times. But particularly in terms of moral development in adults, we need those discussions. It's the only way we're going to be able to figure out what's right and wrong and discern with God how to act or how to refrain from acting.
How much do you think this conversation is tied to spiritual transformation in the context of church? Spiritual formation. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like this, what we're talking about now, should be also an outgrowth of a church that is focusing on the spiritual formation of their congregants, which is something that I think was set aside for many years. It's coming back around. I'm grateful for that, because I think through that, there is great spiritual transformation, which includes this aspect of our lives and who we are, and that's the moral character development. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I was going to even ask you, Anita, you're a spiritual director, and so you're getting people that are coming to you trying to discern how God is at work and trying to kind of create pathways forward for them. And spiritual and moral are so intertwined. You can't just say, I'm focusing on the spiritual without the moral coming along. Yes. And vice versa, which is a little bit more subversive statement, I think. But, you know, if you're asking a person to kind of discern what God wants from them, that can be very ethereal feeling. But if it's tied also to action and choice, mm-hmm. and you can read particularly the book of James in the New Testament, and you can see it's full of moral implication and moral imperative that some Christians, like Martin Luther, didn't even think it should be in the Bible because it felt too works-oriented. This isn't about works. This is about a life that honors God, heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so things like spiritual disciplines, self-examination, you know, conversation, service, all of these things have a moral component to them.
Well, I think of, I always get it mixed up, Socrates or Plato, the unexamined life is not worth living, mm-hmm. which I think was not necessarily said from a spiritual standpoint, but they are intertwined. And we have not been taught societally to be a society that is strong on reflection and reflective living. And I think that has been, sadly, a contributor to the lack in development of adult moral character.
Mm-hmm. It's, as I was thinking about all of this in the last week, I recognized that sometimes moral development comes when we make the choice to do something hard or uncomfortable.
Like tell the truth. Because authenticity is a piece of the development of moral character. Anyway, can't carry on with your thoughts, though.
Oh, no. I want to affirm that. As I was watching the Kavanaugh hearings, for those that are listening maybe 6 months from when we're taping, it's early October 2018, and, you know, this country is coming off of several week long discussion that has a lot to do with character and character development. And one thing, no matter where you fall on the scale, the one thing that was striking in watching the hearing before the Senate last week and before the world, because we were all, so many were watching, I won't say we were all watching, but we were all asked to listen and to decide the veracity of the claims that we were hearing, the truthfulness of the claims we were hearing, and what made sense, and what was beyond the politics. We were listening to two people who both had, you know, made difficult choices in the context of, you know, they were at a party, they were young, there was lots of discussion about that. But again and again, it still comes back to character. And I found myself wondering, where is this going to lead us 10 years from now? And maybe that's why I'm feeling a renewed urgency to begin to talk about moral choices, which really tie toward courage for so many of us. It's hard to tell the truth. It's hard to walk into a situation where there's going to likely be a confrontation and there might be a loser. And, you know,
I remember when Mike and I were living in Chicago still, and he was working at Breakthrough Urban Ministries on the west side of Chicago, he left there one day and was driving back toward the expressway to come home. And he was probably 2-3 blocks max away from Breakthrough when he happened upon a man and a woman, and the man punched the woman in the face.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. So he was at a stop sign. And Mike, you know, a million things are going through his head at this time. He's not here to tell it, so I'll do my best. Do I stop? Do I do something? Might I get shot and killed? Or punched myself? Or what do I do? You know, do I or what do I do? And he rolled down the window, you know, electronic window, and shouted at this man. He did not get out of his car. And and the guy shouted something back, and Mike shouted again, and eventually he walked away from the woman, and Mike called the police.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, you know, because courage, when you use the word courage, immediately what happened to me was I felt fear, because fear is, when courage is required, fear is a component that either drives us to stand and do or say the courageous thing, or to run away and hide.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, depending on the kind of moral character that has been developed in us, that will sometimes, not, you know, we don't always make the right choice. You know, there are physical fears, there are emotional fears, there are, you know, the relational fears. There are different levels of fear. I understand that. But this is a piece of that conversation and discussion. And I think that we are crying out for people to stand up and be counted and to have courage.
Right. And it will always be the hard thing, you know, that just like water seeks its own level, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. we're going to, my own inclination is to look for the easy way out, to hedge my bets, you know, to try to, you know, preserve myself in some way. And practicing choices and being conscious that this is a part of what our discipleship is. Yes. It's not just about training our children, but we have got to commit to continue to be trained ourselves, not just to grow spiritually and to kind of isolate that, but to recognize that it spills over into every choice that we make in our lives. Rolling down the window and yelling, knowing that the guy could have had a gun, the guy could have come after him, the guy could have stabbed the woman. It could have gone 58 different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't know who you're going to be until you're in that moment.
I agree.
That's what discipleship is. Discipleship is about going to the gym, you know, in every way, you know, and
practice. That's a great analogy. That's, yes, yes.
I wish I made it up. It's not, because yeah. that's part of what the root of the word disciple means in Greek. It kind of speaks to that language. But I recognize more and more that these small things, if I'm intentional about practicing them, I will be prepared to roll down the window and yell, "Hey, knock it off!"
Yeah, you know? Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, thinking about people of character, and I, you know, it doesn't matter where you stand, if you're a fan of Tim Tebow or not. You know, he had some challenges early on when he was still doing football. You know, wearing the verses under his eyes and whatever, criticisms and whatnot. And he's weathered a lot of storms. He's trying the baseball route now. But this is a young man. He's still young compared to me. He's, you know, he founded a foundation that really leans in and desires to care about children with disabilities, young people with disabilities. He does that event every year around prom time, where people step up and take someone with Down syndrome to the prom, someone who might not get invited otherwise. And he's done all kinds of wonderful things. And I do want to give away some copies of his book today. And so I thought I'd raise his name in this conversation about character.
Well, it fits. I mean, he's, for some people, he might feel like a caricature of evangelical Christians, you know, kind of earnest and, you know, the kneeling, which then went into a whole different kind of conversation just a few years later, kneeling in a different way. But I have a nephew who's Downs, and his quiet work, Tebow's quiet work behind the scenes, using part of his platform to be able to raise other people up that were completely in the shadows in lots of ways, and in a really small but meaningful way, is the kind of thing that we're talking about here. So go on with your giveaway.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that's helpful. Well, I've got three copies of Tim Tebow's new book, This Is the Day, to give away. And it's all about igniting your passion, living with purpose, some good stuff. So if you're a Tim Tebow fan, email me, producer@anitalustria.com, and give me your mailing address. And I'm going to draw three names in a couple of weeks. So that'll give more people a chance to download and listen to the podcast. And so again, producer@anitalustria.com, and send me your email address. And if you're just not an emailer, you'd rather mail me, you can do it, but do it quick. You can mail your name and address to me at Anita Lustria, 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. And you can give to the podcast as well, help support it financially, either of those ways. That email address, you can use that on PayPal, and the mailing address. Some people prefer writing a check. I get that. Well, let's move on to another topic. There's certainly no exhausting of what we've been talking about, but this has been interesting to me, Michelle. You're studying Ecclesiastes this fall. You're teaching it, aren't you?
I'm co-teaching.
Okay. And you say that this study has convicted you of something, and I'd like to hear about that.
Yes. And this kind of ties actually to something that you and I talked about a while ago, when we did another podcast, which is that a lot of us aren't very good at having fun in our lives, particularly as we get older.
Yeah.
But as I read Ecclesiastes, which most people say, oh, that's such a buzzkill of a book. It's so depressing. And I am just loving this. It could just be because I'm a glass quarter full kind of person. And that might even be a generous assessment of myself. But I am loving this partly because the message isn't you know, life is hard and then you die. It's, I mean, it's there. It's definitely there. But the other half of the story is that enjoying our lives is an act of worship.
That's hard to receive. Keep talking. Keep talking. Because what? We've been taught, we have not been taught that. Keep talking.
I know. I said to the women in this study, I quoted the H.L. Mencken well-known kind of phrase that he said, which is Puritanism, the haunting fear that someone somewhere may be happy. And the Puritans were, you know, our pilgrim forefathers and foremothers in this country. But it really ties to the way that a lot of us in the church function in our lives. It's ironic that we were just talking about moral character development, and on the same, you know, kind of the dark side of this for a lot of us is that we're worried about our behavior. We perform our Christianity, and so out of that, we kind of get the reputation as very dour, you know, uncharitable people, you know, as a group, not individuals, but as a group. That's kind of one caricature of us. On the other hand, in my own life, my anxiety about the future, depression, regret over the past, has also kept me from being very present in the moment I'm in. I've got lots of hard stuff circling in my life, just as many of your listeners, probably all of your listeners do. And those things can rob us of the gift of life that God's given us. It's that even just stopping and noticing, it may feel like a cliche, but for some reason, for me, it struck me on my reading of Ecclesiastes that just being able to receive life in this moment as a gift is a way of worshiping God. There's no worship song going, there's no prayer going, but simply noticing and reflecting back to God, sharing the moment with God in my life, is maybe the good news, one of the good news messages of Ecclesiastes.
Now, I don't think you have to make a geographical move to have this happen, but I will say that this has been a part of what has happened to me in my geographical move. I, you know, to play or to enjoy, well, that wasn't in my vocabulary. It was all purpose all the time. And now some of it was a shift in employment as well. You know, not every minute was no longer filled. But I really had to wrestle with, is it okay to enjoy life? Isn't that sad? But I really had to wrestle with it. And now I'm kind of protective of that 45 minutes to an hour that I go to the pool almost every day. And I don't feel guilty about it anymore. I used to feel guilty about it, you know, and this morning on a quick 25-minute bike ride, I was reveling in the fact that these little palm trees, I need to know the name of them, but they look like Dr. Seuss characters. Anyway, they're kind of rejuvenating and coming back to life. And I almost took a picture. One of them looks like Cousin It from... Was that the Addams Family or the Munsters? I get it mixed up. I think
it's
Addams Family.
Munsters.
Oh, Munster. Okay. I don't know.
Just write in and tell us which one.
Yes,
it was.
Exactly. But one of them looks just like Cousin It. And today I'm riding around and I'm laughing. I've got music blasting in my headphones and I'm laughing at Cousin It, the palm tree, and just enjoying that, enjoying the beautiful creation around me that God has provided. And there you go, that God has provided. Well, why would he do that you know, if this beauty was not meant to be enjoyed by his, you know, his other creatures, us.
And we are, we kind of hear that the summary of Ecclesiastes is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you'll die. Well, that is actually not the message in there. It is that you're living now. So if you can eat, drink, and be merry, take it as a gift. Mm. It doesn't mean spend it to excess. It doesn't mean you deserve it, you know, or any of these other warped ways that we have in our culture. I still am not great at having fun. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just a lot of hard stuff around me, but now I am paying attention and savoring, you know, a delicious meal, or, you know, time watching a movie with my husband, or just laughing. Yeah. I mean, even just lots of laughing with you or a friend.
Yes, totally. I just said that to someone yesterday about the power of laughter. It's so great. I'm so grateful for it. I, you know, gotta have some of that every day. But I went from I'm unworthy, I don't deserve, not to, oh, I deserve, but to gratefulness, which I think is the right progression. You know, I'm not worthy of enjoying this, but to opening my hand and receiving and saying, thank you, Lord, I'm grateful for this.
I think that is why Ecclesiastes is there. It's kind of a balancer. And for those of us who are in the second half of our lives, we know that those words are true, that, you know, you can try this and it's not going to prolong your life, and you can try that and it's not going to prolong your life. You know, injustice happens. If someone had been able to figure out how to make the world a better place, probably it would have happened. And yet, God is at work in this. He is redeeming us, and he is present with us. And being present with us means that there is the ability to find enjoyment, joy, you know, in the middle of all of the chaos and mess and court hearings and all the rest of the stuff. There's still places for joy.
Yes.
It makes me sound pretty Pollyanna-ish. Not true.
That's great. Yeah, good thoughts. I'd love to hear from people, even as we've talked already about a couple of topics, would love to have you write in and give your thoughts and opinions as well. And again, that same email address works, producer@anitalustria.com. So feel free to let me know your thoughts, and Michelle as well, forward those thoughts on to her. This is sort of a Milrose Club minus two people. It's just the two of us, but that's kind of what we're doing here today. And I enjoy these kinds of podcasts. Let's talk about international travel. You put this in the list. I almost went to another topic that you gave that's a real downer. We'll save that one for another time. But you said international travel is a modern luxury. I agree. I get two or three travel emails a week and usually just delete them, but like kind of looking and salivating over those Viking River cruises and thinking, I'd love to do that. Probably never will, but you never know. So, you know, most of us who have had the privilege of going somewhere, you say this in your email to me, going somewhere new, we say things like, it's opened my eyes to how others live. It's made history come alive. What are some right where you are practices we can do to grow in our understanding of the world around us? I thought those were really good questions, and that's not where I thought you were going to take that. And I think that's true. I had the privilege at a young age, 14, 15, 16, I started going on these summer longer missions trips. They were 10 week long, and which I think gave me, it wasn't just the 10 days that some, you know, groups youth groups take, and you know, there are all kinds of opinions about that. I understand that. But my eyes were opened from age 14 on. That made a huge difference in my world. I've not thought about it as history coming alive, though I've got to say, after I graduated from college, I toured for an entire year with a singing group. And we spent a lot of time in Germany, going to Würzburg, Worms, Marburg. You know, I saw the door where the 95 Theses was pounded onto it, by, you know. And so, yes, history has come alive for me, and as well as experience going to Dachau. Mm-hmm. You know, Michelle, I think of you and your Jewish heritage, and I can't even fathom what taking a trip like that would mean, standing side by side with someone like you. Mm-hmm. I have done that, a justice journey here in this country, standing side by side with African American brothers and sisters. It would be a different journey going to some of these spaces in Germany with Jewish brothers and sisters. Whew. But yes, say more about this international travel luxury, and how that has, what that's done in your own life.
Well, it's interesting. My grandson, he's 10. They're doing some kind of study in school about like where you're from, your origins, countries of the world. And so I was with him last night. He got in the car and we spent the next hour, as we were driving around doing a couple of other things, talking about World War II, origins, DNA, where he's from, you know, where, you know, kind of what makes up his story, because he's got a mix of Mexican and Jewish and a lot of other kind of Western European stuff. So there's he's got an amazing story that his DNA is telling him. And so we talked about all those things and what it might mean for him. And so I started thinking, this has been on my mind always, because not everyone can buy a plane ticket and go somewhere new. If you're living in a small town and you're, you know, this is where you live and you don't have the resources, just learning, kind of putting yourself in a learner's mode, kind of creating your own social studies units, as it were, can make a big difference. We homeschooled and I loved doing unit studies where we would immerse ourselves in a particular historical time period or cultural place, and we would have some meals, we would watch movies, we would maybe read a story or two from literature from that country. Now, this totally appeals to me. I did not approach math study with my children with the same enthusiasm
yes.
at all. Now I can say it, zero enthusiasm, but, you know, duty, but not enthusiasm. But this was a great joy to me. And with the advent of online streaming services like Netflix or Amazon Prime, you can watch a foreign language movie with subtitles and learn something about the culture that is in your mind. You can have a meal. You can just make a night of it. You can do it with a group, you know, your small group, or a book group. If you're reading, you know, I mean, it's really easy to just maybe take one more step beyond reading the book and have a meal and, you know, ingredients. Or you can find Americanized versions if you're reading about, say, the food of southern India and you're thinking, oh, I should make that. And then you realize that the Piggly Wiggly in your little tiny town in the middle of Nebraska may not have those ingredients. You can find usually an Americanized version to give yourself a gentle nudge in that direction. But it's just a matter of, even if you're just raising awareness through story via book or movie, and food, which is a very powerful transmitter of culture. Taking some steps in that direction, you know, reading maybe their local news online. But if you're curious, if you're a learner, you know, I think you can grow a little bit right where you are. And the world is a lot bigger than just what's happening in the U.S. And that might be maybe the biggest takeaway. So did you have anything else to add?
Well, I love that, number one. And I think, you know, even if you're in a small town in a rural area, I think of where I came from up in northern Maine, there is still the, you know, Museum of Agriculture in this very agricultural county, Aroostook County. And you know, what did that look like back in the day when my grandfather was a farmer, when potatoes were picked by hand and when 3 weeks were taken off of school for all of the children every October? So they started school August 1st so that they could take off 3 weeks in October. It was a harvest recess. And these kids, my mother was one of them, earned, you know, potato picking money. She earned money for her winter clothes. She earned money 1 year and bought a new bedroom set because of the amount of potatoes she picked. And, you know, Sears delivered it, ordered through the Sears catalog.
Wow!
You know, and so, I agree with Michelle, no matter where you are, there is your own local history. Who came to settle your community? I think that's also can be really interesting. And if you're in a little bit larger area, what museums are within 1 hour drive or 2 hour drive? I think Mike and I were just recently talking. We have not explored Tampa yet, and that's just an hour away. And there are plenty of opportunities there for learning. There's a big Cuban community in Ybor City, and where they make the Cuban cigars, and where, you know, there's so much. And Michelle, I think part of this conversation is, We need to, I'm going to make it more of an imperative, we need to remain curious people. Mm. I believe that's part of how God has created us, and some of us have just decided to sort of mute that or shut that little switch off and just sit on the couch. And I love my Netflix like the next guy or girl, you know, I do, but I still want to get out and learn and grow and have conversations with your neighbor next door. Where were they born and raised? Mm-hmm. You know, we've gotten to know a guy at the pool that originally had very derogatory things to say, especially to Mike. He was more in conversation to Mike about Chicago. Well, and I thought, this is a bigoted guy. What's his story? Well, Mike hung in there. Found out that he and his family hosted all kinds of international students during the high school years of his kids. And he would cook international meals and, you know, but he didn't want to let you know any of that. It was very interesting. So Mike has sort of been peeling the layers off in conversation. And, you know, what can we learn from those people around us that we might actually kind of want to shut conversation down with because it wasn't all that pleasant when we began? How do we get a little below the surface and learn more and remain curious about where we are and about the people that surround us?
Well, in this era where so many people are doing DNA tests.
Yes.
I had that conversation with my grandson last night because he said, I'd like to do a DNA test. I said, well, Leo, Grandpa and I actually have our results that we can share with you. So that tells part of your story. It's not your whole story for sure, you know, but it was his interest, and he is a very curious, like that's one of his leading traits.
Well, I gotta say, I think that Grandma Michelle, I don't know what he calls you, has helped to instill that in him, because it matters the way we talk to our children and our grandchildren. They become curious if they see it in us. I mean, this is all modeling. This goes back to our character development conversation.
Yeah, it all connects.
Yeah, it does connect. You know, how much of who they are comes to them through the modeling that they have seen in the authorities around them, family and friends and others, right?
Well, if you're a person who's done a DNA test and then you get the little pie chart that says you're from here, here, and here, because very few of us are 100% of anything, mm-hmm. Then there's another gateway to think, oh, it says that I'm 1% Nigerian, which was one of my surprises in my own DNA test.
Oh, I love it.
And I'm like, we need to go out for some Nigerian food. And, you know, just when we were watching the World Cup, I said, we're gonna cheer because the United States wasn't in the match. And we like watching the World Cup.
Yes.
But we can root for our DNA team.
Yeah, I love that. What a great idea. You know, it just takes a little creativity, really. Oh, you would have been a good teacher. Well, you were. You homeschooled. You were a good teacher.
Not so, with math. Not
well,
math.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been either. I was tutored and still managed a C or a D when it came to algebra. I just could not. And that's not even high math. I didn't progress beyond that because that was the end of the line for me. I was not going to be going into one of those fields. That's great.
You don't want me doing brain surgery on you, that is for sure. Yes. I can write you a story, but I can't. I'm not going to balance your books or do an operation. So
I'm happy to hear that. Oh, Michelle, always a delight to have you on. And I love how your mind works. You're always thinking about a variety of topics because you are a curious person, because you're a writer for many reasons. But I appreciate what you brought to us today on the podcast. So thank you so much.
Well, it's a huge honor. And listeners, if you've got more to add to any of this, I want to hear. I need this is a three-way conversation between Anita and I and whoever's listening, and is listening to Anita every week. Yep. There's always more questions to ask and things to wonder about.
And a reminder, Michelle's latest book is Born to Wander, Recovering the Value of Our Pilgrim Identity. Congratulations, it went into a second printing.
Yay!
That's awesome, by the way. That's incredible.
Yes.
Does not happen very often in this day and age. So I'm delighted for you. Great book, and highly recommend it. You can find out more either at anitalustria.com or in the show notes of the podcast. And again, feel free to email me with your mailing address. I'll put you in the drawing for the Tim Tebow book as well. So that's producer@anitalustria.com. Okay, I think that's all the biz. So to everyone, as always, I say, keep the conversation going.